This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of acute subclavian artery thrombosis from the hand section on orthobullets.com. Acute subclavian artery thrombosis is acute upper extremity ischemia caused by a proximal occlusion at the level of the subclavian artery. As far as the epidemiology, the incidence of acute subclavian artery thrombosis is rare and occurs in less than 1% of the population. Risk factors include aortic arch abnormality, aortic arch syndrome, trauma, arterial catheterization, and pre-existing stenosis. As far as the pathophysiology, limb pain occurs secondary to lack of blood flow to the extremity. The pathoanatomy is unclear, but may be secondary to non-occlusive proximal atherosclerotic plaque and/or cardiac embolization. As far as the prognosis of acute subclavian artery thrombosis, it varies with and without treatment. As far as outcomes with treatment, favorable prognosis has been reported with prompt recognition and treatment. As far as outcomes without treatment, progression to stroke and upper extremity amputation can occur. Now, let's go over some relevant anatomy, specifically blood supply and biomechanics. As far as blood supply, on the left side, the subclavian is the third branch off the aortic arch. As far as the blood supply on the right side, the subclavian is one of two branches of the brachiocephalic or innominate artery. With respect to biomechanics, the subclavian supplies the vertebral artery, which joins to form the basilar artery to supply the cerebellum. Moving on to presentation, patients with acute subclavian artery thrombosis will typically have a history of sudden onset of symptoms without an inciting event, and atrial fibrillation is associated in 80% of the cases of upper extremity thromboembolism. As far as symptoms, common symptoms include arm pain, nausea, and paresthesias. On physical exam, inspection may reveal a cyanotic/pale upper extremity, diffuse tenderness, and/or a cold limb. As far as neurologic findings, a normal neurologic examination is common. As far as the neurovascular examination, pulses may be absent, that is specifically the axillary, brachial, radial, and ulnar. Doppler signals may be present in non-occlusive disease. As far as some provocative maneuvers, different blood pressures may be noted on the affected and unaffected upper extremity, and increased pain and fatigue with upper extremity with the exertion of the limb. As far as imaging modalities to work up acute subclavian artery thrombosis, the ones to know are arteriography, CT angiography, MRA, Doppler ultrasonography, and echocardiography. Arteriography is the recommended diagnostic modality and allows for percutaneous treatment of the occlusion. CT angiography can be performed expeditiously to rule out other causes of occlusion. Moving on to MRA, keep in mind that you cannot treat occlusion at the time of diagnosis. Finally, echocardiography can rule out cardiac embolus following treatment of thrombosis. As far as other studies, a hypercoagulable panel can be performed to rule out an underlying disorder. However, labs are often unremarkable. Treatment for acute subclavian artery thrombosis can be non-operative or operative. There is limited role for non-operative treatment with limb-threatening ischemia. However, intravenous and oral anticoagulation can be used to supplement percutaneous or surgical treatment. Operative options include percutaneous treatment and surgical treatment. Percutaneous treatment is indicated for any patient with symptomatic limb ischemia. Techniques include intraarterial thrombolysis, percutaneous transluminal angioplasty, manual aspiration, and stenting. Surgical treatment is indicated for any patient with symptomatic limb ischemia. Techniques include embolectomy/thrombectomy and bypass grafting. Some complications to mention include limb ischemia and basilar stroke. Limb ischemia can lead to gangrene and/or loss of limb. Basilar stroke is a complication when there is a delay in diagnosis, as prolonged ischemia can progress to decreased cerebral perfusion and acute stroke symptoms. As far as iatrogenic basilar stroke, this can occur if the vertebrobasilar artery system is left unprotected during endovascular treatment, and embolism can subsequently occur. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic has been tested on past exams. The first question reads, Your 68-year-old neighbor, a retired military veteran, was diagnosed with non-valvular atrial fibrillation 2 years ago. His other chronic medical conditions include hypertension and diabetes mellitus. He has never had any surgery in the past. His heart rate has been appropriately controlled with calcium channel blockers. As a caring hand surgeon, you were concerned that he has the possibility of developing upper extremity thromboembolism secondary to his atrial fibrillation. What is the most likely treatment to reduce the likelihood of thromboembolism in the hand because of his specific cardiac condition? And the choices are 1. Cholesterol medication. 2. Antiplatelets. 3. Antibiotics. 4. Beta blocker. And 5. Anticoagulants. The correct answer to this question is 5. Anticoagulants. So atrial fibrillation is the most common cause of upper extremity thromboembolism and can be treated with anticoagulants by a cardiologist. To quickly review, acute non-traumatic hand ischemia has many potential causes and often requires a multidisciplinary approach to diagnose and treat. Up to 93% of acute upper extremity ischemia is from cardiac embolism. The most common cause of cardiac embolism is atrial fibrillation. Loss of atrial contractility and expulsion leads to stasis and thrombus development. Zimmerman reviewed occlusive vascular disorders of the upper extremity. He discusses that arterial occlusive disease of the hand is usually secondary to post-traumatic occlusion of the ulnar artery. An embolic source is more likely in the setting of atrial fibrillation or following myocardial infarction, and venous occlusion is more likely when there is a hypercoagulable state. Brinkley and Hepper review structural cardiac abnormalities that manifest as acute dysvascular conditions of the hand. They report that cardiomyopathy, valvular disease, atrial septal defects, and aortic arch abnormalities may all be associated with thromboembolism. However, the authors note that atrial fibrillation constitutes 80% of upper extremity thromboembolism. Based on the 2014 AHA/HRS guideline for the management of patients with atrial fibrillation, those with any one high risk factor or more than one moderate risk factor should be treated with anticoagulation for non-valvular atrial fibrillation in addition to medication for heart control. The authors report that high risk factors include prior stroke or transient ischemic attack, systemic thromboembolism, or age 75 years or older, while moderate risk factors include age 65 to 74 years, female sex, hypertension, diabetes mellitus, heart failure, or arterial disease. And moving on to the final question. A 42-year-old woman presents with sudden left arm pain, cyanosis, and paresthesia. Examination reveals mildly diminished grip strength and intact sensation over all the digit pulps. The brachial, radial, and ulnar pulses are not palpable, although Doppler examination detects a monophasic waveform. Treatment for the most likely diagnosis may include all of the following except. And the choices are 1. Aortic root replacement, 2. Intra-arterial thrombolysis, 3. Angioplasty, 4. Manual aspiration, and 5. Stenting. The correct answer to this question is 1. Aortic root replacement. So this patient has non-occlusive acute left subclavian artery thrombosis, which in this case manifests as absent pulses but detectable Doppler. Treatment can include percutaneous approaches. Aortic root replacement is not indicated for subclavian arterial disease alone. It is, however, indicated for ascending thoracic aortic dissection. To quickly review, acute subclavian artery thrombosis is a rare cause of upper limb ischemia. Risks include aortic arch abnormality, aortic arch syndrome, trauma, arterial catheterization, and pre-existing atheroma/stenosis at the subclavian artery ostium. Patterns include slow occlusion, like in the case of atherosclerosis, blue finger syndrome, in the case of repeated focal microemboli, and acute global ischemia, in cases of large emboli. The diagnosis is made by conventional angiography, which has the added advantage of allowing percutaneous treatment. Treatment strategies include 1. Medical therapy, specifically heparin, aspirin, clopidogrel, IV thrombolysis, glycoprotein 2B/3A antagonists, like abciximab, eptifibatide, and tirofiban, 2. Open embolectomy and bypass grafting, and 3. Percutaneous endovascular procedures. Pellerin et al. Described two cases of percutaneous endovascular management of acute left subclavian artery thrombosis. The first case was treated with thrombolysis, stenting, and manual aspiration of the thrombus. The second case was treated with anticoagulation, stenting, and long-term anticoagulation. Rapp et al. Reviewed patients with proximal lesions causing upper extremity ischemia. 14 had extrinsic compression, 17 had brachiocephalic atherosclerosis, 1 had Takayasu's arteritis, and 1 had radiation atherosclerosis. Some patients had ipsilateral vertebral arterial reversal of flow with neurologic symptoms characteristic of vertebrobasilar insufficiency. Patients with occlusion had arterial reconstruction, bypass, and end arterectomy. 5 required amputation, 4 because of delayed diagnosis. They concluded that these lesions should not be overlooked as consequences are devastating. That's all for this review about acute subclavian artery thrombosis. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.